Hello and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Gates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. It is the calm before the storm. So we're checking in on this Monday, the day before cut down day. The roster will go from 90 to 53 after the roster will be, you know, the shakeup from the roster. So that'll come into effect Tuesday afternoon. So we'll at least see the initial roster before the Packers host the Lions. And, you know, there's all the fun projections and, you know, we've been talking about it going back and forth. And Ryan, I'll let you start it off because you have a story online about, you can say, your projections of the initial 53-man roster. And so I guess I'm curious, from your perspective, was there anything from the preseason finale that might have played a role in any guy that maybe earned a roster spot or not so much?
Well, I want to take it more, I guess, 30,000-foot totality of the landscape, because I think the thing that the biggest question when it comes to how will this initial 53-man roster look, for me, it's the offensive line depth. And I even wrote in the immediately after the game, filed my 53-man roster projection. I had them with 8 offensive linemen, Kadeem Telfert being the 8th, which would be the fewest that Brian Gutekunst has kept since he became GM in 2018. In fact, it's been double digits on the initial 53 the past 3 years. So 8 is not just a few, it's substantially lower. But when you look at it, I have a hard time finding the quality of depth to warrant more than 8. And I literally wrote in the explanation, do not be surprised if Brian Gutekunst is scouring the rest of the league to find depth here. And then obviously he makes a trade for a 6th-round pick with the Philadelphia Eagles to bring in a more depth to that room. So that's not a surprise. How does that affect who he may keep or not keep? I think there's still questions on that offensive line in terms of depth. That'll be very interesting to find out on cutdown day. But that's where I have my focus the most. As far as the game, and Saboon, I know we talked about this, you know, the thing that surprised me the most against the Seahawks was not seeing Mecole Hardman take punt returns in the second half. If Mecole Hardman, I had thought that Mecole Hardman might be on the bubble. And if he was firmly on the bubble, if you were allowing him a chance to really go and win a roster spot, I would think that you would want to give him as many cracks as possible at the ticket to a roster spot, which is the return game. I mean, he's got to obviously function as a receiver too, but that's the ticket. And so for Will Shepard to be taking punt returns in the second half, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I have the Brian Gutekunst crystal ball and know exactly what that means, but it sure, and Spoon, you tell me the same. It sure felt like, okay, this might be a guy who's on the wrong side of the bubble and they don't want to get him hurt. Maybe you got to pay him. I wonder that.
Yeah, I think that's worth noting for sure. I don't know. So at the same time, I'm trying to formulate this thought, but at the same time that they pulled Hardman, you know, Malik Heath was having a pretty good special teams day.
Yeah.
You know, he was all over the place. And I my guess is their plan might have been to, okay, give Hardman a couple of chances and then let's see what Will Shepard can do, because we might want to put him on the practice squad, you know, because they are auditioning guys for the practice squad as well. And so that they might have just decided, you know, we've seen enough. We know what he is. And I think they're moving on from him. That's my opinion. I think Heath, I'll be really surprised if Hardman made it ahead of Malik Heath. But, you know, then I thought the contract thing is always something to look at. Except he's got, I think Hardman's a minimum wage guy. He's not too high. He's a $1 million. So that probably didn't play into it, but Ultimately, I just think it makes sense. I think they're moving on from Hardman.
This is a question for either of you guys. How much do you think because of the Christian Watson injury that played a bigger role in maybe helping Malik Heath? Because you would say maybe Heath is a stronger receiver compared to Mecole Hardman, and then you add in the layer of special teams. I don't know, Ryan, you can start up. Do you think how much of that Christian Watson injury maybe even benefited Malik Heath at all?
I think what benefited Malik Heath is that Malik Heath had a much better second half of camp than first. He had a really slow start the first half of camp. It was not great. And this is a guy who the Packers know well, right, because he's played meaningful snaps. He played in the playoff game, right, and didn't play well, but he played in the playoff game in January. He had a slow start, but the second half of camp he was much better. Had a nice third down catch against the Seahawks in the preseason finale, but he was doing it in practice too. They're so different, Mecole Hardman and Malik Heath. It's like apples and oranges. They provide different things. I did not have Mecole Hardman on my projected 53. That was the projection off of what I think the Packers will do more than it is even what I would do. I'm not here to stump for Mecole Hardman, and I'm not saying that he's the savior of the return game either. But I know I don't like the return game at all without him. Like, Keyshawn Nix is fine, but I don't like what they have at punt returner. Maybe Mecole Hardman's not it either, but it's better than putting Jaden Reed back there. First of all, I wouldn't want to put Jaden Reed back there. He's too important to the offense. I don't want to take those hits. Secondly, he wasn't good at it last year. Like, that's not that's not his forte. It was not a strength. So I don't see the benefit there. For that, Mecole Hardman does make some sense to me on this roster, and I'm not, again, saying that he's the answer. It's just he at least keeps Jaden Reed from doing it. But Malik Heath, the Packers like his scrappiness. They like that he is not only a willing blocker, but a pretty good one. And obviously, with Matt LaFleur, the run game, he values receivers that block. So I think that ultimately is that, and the fact that he finished camp fairly strong is why that he's going to be in line to potentially get a roster spot. Obviously, with Christian Watson, to your point, starting on PUP, yeah, it would make sense to maybe have a little bit more depth. Not just Christian Watson, though. It's Jaden Reed, freshly out of a walking boot. It's Dontavian Wicks, who's missed most of the camp. They just need bodies there.
Spoon, I do want to bounce off that a little bit as far as what Ryan just made the point of with the return game. I guess, what are your thoughts, and what will you be, keeping an eye out on in terms of when they're deciding, like I said, if Hardman is, if they're going to move on from him, who do you think, they would want to experiment with back there? And punt in.
They don't have very many options. Right. They just don't, and they haven't done anything to really change that. It's possible someone will pop up on waiver wire, but when you just keep a returner, you're hurting some other position. You need a guy who can play multiple positions and return, like Keyshawn Nixon. It's nice they have an all-pro kick returner who also is a starting cornerback. I don't know if you can stress Keyshawn Nixon by making him return kickoffs and punts. Maybe you can give someone else the kickoff return duties. But then why would you do that? Because he's an all-pro. So I really don't know where they go. I think they'll go with Jaden Reed. I really do, because he'll catch the ball every time. He makes pretty decent decisions. I don't think they're going to risk Matthew Golden back there, not for the rookie year. So I don't know. I don't know what else they could do there. But when you're talking about Heath versus Hardman, I mean, Heath is probably not as accomplished a receiver as Hardman in the fact that, Heath sometimes doesn't run the right routes and sometimes isn't precise with what he does, but he brings that attitude and physical nature that you really want. And you don't find very many blockers like him. And he's he's a rough and tumble guy, and you got to have some of those. If that's the kind of team you want to be, that's what you're, you know, selling to your players, then that's the kind of guy you got to keep. So,
yeah. Here's I think, the best way maybe to explain the punt return conundrum. It's like, let's be clear, it's not ideal for Keyshawn Nixon to be the kickoff returner. It's not ideal because he's going to play 800 plus snaps at corner. That's a large workload. Why do you do that? Because like Spoon just said, Keyshawn Nixon is an all pro. Like, he is a weapon there. He can impact games there. So it's not ideal, but because of that, well, you do, right? Jaden Reed's not that at punt return. Now, he can catch the ball, but like he's not Keyshawn Nixon at kickoff return. Like, so it's not ideal for Jaden Reed to be a punt returner because he has a large impact on that offense, and you don't want him doing that too, but they might have no other choice.
Yeah, because like you said, you don't want to throw a young guy out there like a Matthew Golden or Savion Williams, who's been hurt. Like, you know, there's some guys that you would want to throw a name out there, but in terms of the situation, it just might not be very ideal. As far as I want to, few more points with the offense, as far as the running back position, again, injuries, I think, you know, I guess it can make those other spots interesting with Marshawn Lloyd being out. Right now, Ryan, from the projections you saw, Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Brooks, I guess, you know, how much would that, you know, I guess what will you look at if Marshawn Lloyd is able to come back and, you know, how that room could play out?
Well, I just think with Marshawn Lloyd, you know, I had two, I projected two players to start on IR with a designated return status. One was Marshawn Lloyd, and I'm very curious if Spoon, you think I'm crazy with this projection, just let me know. But I had Jacob Monk too with the hamstring. Both of them, I thought, were an opportunity to save a spot with a guy who you just might not need early on in September. You can get away with 4 weeks. Marshawn Lloyd especially, though, that's a really good room with those three. I mean, Josh Jacobs speaks for himself. Emmanuel Wilson is one of the better backup running backs in the league. They're kind of one hand last year that the offenses in the league that had a 1,000-yard rushing running back and a 500-yard rushing running back in the Packers with Emmanuel Wilson were one of them. And then Chris Brooks, he gives you reliability on third down. He gives you something of a fullback role. They like his blocking. They like his short yardage. He's dependable for a third running. I mean, Matt LaFleur values all those things in his offense. They're set with those three. Now, they don't want to move on from Marshawn Lloyd. After the Colts game, Matt LaFleur made it very clear he liked the skill set that he's seen from Marshawn Lloyd when Marshawn Lloyd's been healthy. He got injured on a really tremendous play for a running back on the wheel route down the sideline. That was for a running back, that was a really tough catch. Marshawn Lloyd made look pretty easy. It's just his hamstring went. And so they don't want to move on from Marshawn Lloyd, but they've got to figure out how to keep him healthy, which they have just not been able to do for 2 years now. And what do? You put him, you save a spot, you put him on IR, designate him return, give him another opportunity and try to figure out how to keep his body fresh.
Spoon, any thoughts at all with the
running back? You know, one of the things with Marshawn Lloyd is, you know, people are what's so special about him and what, why even bother? And, you know, I don't know if he's injury prone. The hamstring thing he suffered this time around very well could have been because of the way he got tackled. You know, it wasn't like he just pulled up, as far as I could tell. He got hit. He got high load, you know, along the sideline. Guy dove right into his legs from behind, and the other guy hit him high from the top. So maybe that's an injury that happens to anybody. I don't know. That's what we'll find out. I don't know what his timeline is, but I could see if they think he can be back in a week or two, I could see them keeping him on the 53. And as long as we're talking about kick returners, he's a potential kick returner. I mean, he could be pretty explosive on kick returns. It's a, you know, you'd worry about the injury factor, but geez, I mean, kick returns and running the ball, what's the difference, you know? especially with the new kickoff returns. It's not like guys are running 50 yards down the field and hitting you full blast like that. So I would think he could be a guy they could use on kick returns. I sort of look at it as either they keep four running backs or four tight ends. So if they keep Marshawn Lloyd on the roster, then I would think that maybe Ben Sims is in trouble. If they go with three running backs, then all four tight ends probably make it. And they, you know, they put Marshawn Lloyd on IR. They have a they have a decision. Two guys who could go also go on IR. One is Monk, as you mentioned, Ryan, and the other is Baron Sorrell. We don't know what his status is. Maybe he's they think he'll be back in a week or two, and they don't need to put him on IR. Monk, I don't even know if they're going to keep him. I mean, he did not have a very good camp, and they just traded for a guard in Darian Kennard, who can help them as a backup. So I'm not sure what they're going to do with Monk. That's kind of like one of the big things to watch in cutdowns.
Yeah, that's a great point. Defensively, when we look at the defensive tackles, and Ryan, we were talking about this, and you wrote the story. For me, I was always talking about the up and down with maybe Stackhouse and Brinson, and you also threw Kobe Wooden into this. And I'm not trying to steal your thunder because I know you'll talk a lot about this, but it is going to be interesting how they play it, whether you have a veteran guy or a guy that may be undrafted, had a very good camp, and a draft pick. What do you make of kind of the whole situation with the D-tackles?
It's a great question. On my projected 53, I went pretty heavy on defensive front. I went six defensive tackles. I went six linebackers. I kept Welch and I kept Simmons because they both play special teams, and I think even warrant both staying on this roster at this point. It's really interesting at defensive tackle, though, because we know Brian Gutekunst loves his draft picks. So six-round pick Warren Brinson, who has shown some pass rush ability, that I don't see them cutting him. Nazir Stackhouse, I don't know what more he needs to show. He's not a carbon copy ready-made TJ Slayton replacement, but from hearing what Jeff Hafley's – how he's described him in terms of his size, his – strength, his run defensibility. He's someone that can kind of add to what was lost when TJ Slayton left. So I think he stays, not to mention, if you're a trivia buff, Nazir Stackhouse, probably the best chance that the Packers have of running this streak to 20 straight years that they've kept an undrafted free agent on, or undrafted free agent rookie on their initial 53. And I think that Colby Wooden is someone who is viewed as limited but reliable in what he's asked to do. You know, Colby Wooden, fourth-round pick in the same draft that the Packers selected Carl Brooks in the sixth round. Carl Brooks has been the much more dynamic player a couple years into their career. Carl Brooks can rush the passer at a level that you can play him in sub. He has that value. Colby Wooden, you're not expecting that from. But in terms of run defense, which – again, I think this is a defensive interior defensive line, especially that is going to need to find some way to replace what was lost with TJ Slayton. Colby Wooden is reliable in that. He's not a guy who's going to mess up a lot. You can play him in a role and probably play him more reliably than an undrafted rookie potentially early in the season. So six defensive tackles is not light. I mean that's a healthy number, but that's where I have it.
Spoon, for you, any thoughts on is six maybe a fair number or what?
Yeah, I think it'll be six. I am higher than most people are on Colby Wooden. I think Colby Wooden's in line to have a really pretty good year, and I think he could surpass Carl Brooks. That's just my impression. I am definitely higher than most of the outside world is on Colby Wooden. That's just because I've seen him. He's kind of grown, and I think the defense, the 4-3, fits him really well. And you know, he's a nonstop player, and he's gotten pretty smart, at how to split double teams and things like that. So regardless, I think they keep six. They can't get rid of Brinson. No way they get rid of Sorrell. I don't really see any other. Stackhouse, I agree. I think he's got to stay. So they go with six. Maybe they go one less inside linebacker, or maybe one less outside linebacker to take account for that. The other is they could go one less safety than they have, because they've got multiple options at safety. They've gone with four safeties before. And if they go four there, then they can go six. You know, that gives them an extra guy somewhere. So,
Spoon, as a follow with the linebacker situation with Simmons and Welch, do you think that would have been maybe a competition between those two guys? Or are you similar in Ryan's situation that you said they might have those six and those two will be in the mix?
I think it would be a luxury to have both. I think they have to make a decision on that. I think they're going to wind up keeping Welch. I could see him getting cut, but I thought he played pretty good as a linebacker. Now, they kept using Simmons as a gunner, I mean, all through preseason, and that is sometimes a sign that, you know, if a guy remains on first team special teams, that's a sign. But Welch plays every unit first team. So I think it could, in my mind right now, it's an either or. Doesn't mean it winds up that way, but if you've got to make some tough decisions, I think then that's one of them you're going to have.
I agree with you, Spoon, that it is a luxury. Sometimes teams might get greedy and want to keep a luxury. And where I wonder is, given the chance to have two players on IR designated return, if that might be a way to keep a luxury. Because I also agree I have a hard time seeing Christian Welch get cut. I think that he's a core special teams guy. And I think that he made some plays defensively this preseason. But he's not just a special team. He's a core special teams guy. I also think Isaiah Simmons is someone that can absolutely provide special teams right now. And he, you know, you got to remember, he's very much transitioning to a new position in this defense. He's been used more as a DB the past couple of years. It's like a return to linebacker. It was very up and down. I mean, Isaiah Simmons had some good moments in the preseason, and then he had some busted coverages, right? It looked like a transition. And I'm certainly not going to predict that the Packers uncover the athletic marvel and the potential of Isaiah Simmons, that they're the ones that turn this hidden gem into a diamond, because other teams have tried. That I'm not going to predict this. But if that possibility does exist for a guy that you know right now can help you on special teams, I don't think that there's a real need to move on from him at this point. If you can put a Jacob Monk, a Marshawn Lloyd on IR, designate them to return, and give buy yourself more time to make that decision than the initial cutdown. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, and let's say it's Sorrell. If it's Sorrell who goes on IR, then I think you can keep Simmons. A lot of times it is either or in these situations, and the either or might also be Christian Welch versus Zane Anderson. Last year, that's what it was, and Zane Anderson won out, and Christian Welch was released. Zane Anderson's been hurt. Their safety position, now that Ketan Oladapo has gotten a ton of playing time and he's a good special teams player, they could probably go without Zane Anderson. So if they go with four safeties, then they can keep Isaiah Simmons and Welch. And that might just be the way they go.
That'll be interesting. I was curious about the safety position, too, with Omar Brown. You know, he had a lot of good moments in camp, and he's been dealing with injury out. You know, he's been in the hospital in Indianapolis with everything. So that's something, too, that I was curious about in the safety position. As far as with the corners, though, and Ryan it was funny to read this, even though it's just, I don't know why, to think about it. It's just one of the great stories. Melton, because I mean, it's clear Bo Melton. I think he's been a lock in for what he is, just how he has performed. So I guess, what did you see from Kamal Hadd, and where you said, you know, if there could be a surprise addition to make the roster, it was him.
He had a good finish to the preseason, you know, and you got young corners that show some potential. There's always a chance, you know. I didn't predict Kamal Hadd onto the 53 or project, so I'm not expecting that to happen. But, no, I think Bo Melton has probably been the story of this training camp. I just don't imagine that his transition as a lifelong receiver, hasn't played corner since high school, to now all of a sudden you're in the NFL and go out there and play some corner, could have possibly gone any better. Jeff Hapley said early in camp that he fully expected Bo Melton to have some practices where he got spun around. But I don't think I really saw him get spun around much. Like, it's not like he's like – Omar Brown had 5 interceptions, right? Carrington Valentine, he plays the football. It's not like Bo Melton's doing that. But he's not getting spun around. I also don't think Bo Melton's going to be ready to cover Amon-Ra St. Brown week one. I'm not expecting that. But he's a core special teamer. Like, that is – he has game day 46-man roster value on special teams. He will play against the Lions on special teams, and you know that. So that buys him the time to continue that transition, which I think has gone really well. Kalen King's been one of the more improved players in camp from last year. His positional versatility, ability to play a slot, you know, he had a really good, strong close to the preseason against the Seahawks. And I just want to make clear, like, I am calling Javon Bullard a cornerback until I don't see him taking 90% of his snaps at nickel, because that's what we saw. It's not like he never played safety, right? But that's what we saw in camp for the totality. He is a nickel corner. So I factor on my projection 53, I had 10 DBs. I had 6 corners counting Javon Bullard as a corner, and I had 4 safeties.
Spoon, what do you make of the corner situation, not only the play of, you know, Bo Melton, Kalen King, and just how that's kind of taking shape?
So, yeah, Bo Melton's going to make it. And the thing about Bo Melton is you don't have to play him. I mean, he can be number 5 as far as, you know, assuming Nate Hobbs is ready for the opener. Then, I mean, you got problem getting Carrington Valentine on the field because of how you're running the nickel. So that's not a problem. You know, it's not – Bo Melton's not going to have to play unless it becomes like that situation in 2023 when Alexander was out and Stokes was out. And I think they started, what, Valentine and Valentine against the Vikings late in the year. So I think they're fine with Melton. Kamal Hadd is a guy – I probably shouldn't be asked about him because he's kind of like won me over, and only because I like big corners, and I cannot.
It's your camp crush. It's your camp crush, Spoon. It's your camp crush.
Every once in a while, I have one, right?
Every year, you got a camp crush every year.
I guess pretty much every year. I don't know who mine was last year.
I'll never forget Jack Heflin for you. Jack Heflin.
Yep,
oh,
that
man.
Was a good one for me. Dontavian Wicks was one for me following year. But Hadden has just kind of grown on me. So I don't know if he's going to make it. I think he would be picked up because good corners or potentially good corners. This kid's only a second-year player, too. You know, he was played at Tennessee. He's played big time football. I don't know what they do with him, but he could add some stuff. He could add some size to that position. Bullard, I'm going to count Bullard as a safety. Now, of course, he's going to play in the slot, but you know, for some reason, they've been playing Bullard at safety this last week, and I'm a conspiracy theorist sometimes, and I just wonder if they think Kalen King's a better matchup for Amon-Ra St. Brown for the opener, and that maybe Bullard's starting at safety or rotating with Evan Williams, and they put King at slot just because he's going to be a better cover guy than Javon Bullard. As you know, Bullard is can cover some guys, but not like Kalen King. So I'm kind of wondering that conspiracy part to me is swirling in my head.
Ooh, that's good.
Well, I'm going to count Bullard as a safety, and then it's whether they keep Haddon. I just am thinking that Zane Anderson is not going to make it, so that's kind of where my thinking's at.
Hey, I got my ears percolating because
when
Spoon's got a camp crush, you better pay attention. He doesn't miss.
Have any of my camp crushes come, you know, realized themselves? Like, have they come on to be anybody? No.
Jack Heflin made it 53, Spoon.
Yeah, but I mean, in long term, none of them have resulted in anything.
I'm talking about being a part of the moment. It's Cut Down Tuesday coming up. That got my attention.
It did. I like it. You see the way Spoon was blushing when he was talking about it? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Hey, you know, when you got a crush, you got a crush, you know?
You do.
It's so good. I don't have one. Ryan, do you have a camp crush this year?
I don't know that I have the emotional capacity to really do a whole lot of crushing. Like, I'm just not the right, you know, I'm a little dead inside. So I don't know that I'm the right person to ask. That's, I know, it's a terrible thing. Answer. No, not really. Not a bad
thing. That's how we should be. But
yeah, I wish everyone well. I don't wish anyone poorly. It's not like I'm a curmudgeon. It's like, oh, screw everybody. I wish everyone well, especially this week. I tell everyone, you know, because we talk to a lot of people over the next 24 hours. So I tell everyone I mean it. I hope everyone makes it. I'm not rooting for anyone to not make it. Like, this is a vitally huge moment in the lives of so many people coming up Tuesday. We're talking about dreams being realized. So much hard work and effort goes into getting to this spot. I hope everyone makes it, right? I have a hard time just, you know, singling one out.
I saw a great post. I think it was on Twitter or Instagram. And there's a guy who just got cut from the Bears. And he shows a picture of a beer, and he's in the airport. He says, this is one of my best moments. Having a beer at the airport after being cut for the seventh time.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, that's life in the NFL, you know.
Hey, it better be a Spotted Cow, right? Wait, we should get a sponsorship now.
Oh, in Chicago.
Homer's and Spotted Cow.
Anyway. You know that's my go-to. You know that is my go-to. The only roster I want to make sure I make is the Green 19 podcast Packers News Group roster. That's the only one. I'm going into year two, so I just want to make sure I'm still on this roster.
Your first camp, Dominique, the first full camp, I should say. What did you think of the totality of everything? You got your first view.
I never realized how little you really take from camp. Like, you get to see individuals – and you'll see, like, okay, this guy. But as far as what the team looks like as a whole,
no.
Like, you just don't really know. So that's the funny thing, too, going out in the community. Like, hey, how are the Packers looking? I'm like, I have no idea. He's like, I can say maybe this individual person looked good. But that's the one thing I learned after going through the camp, is that you really don't know what to expect of the team. You can kind of guess on certain positions. But it was fun. It was fun. Nice, 2.5 weeks or so.
Dom, that is such a good lesson to get early, like or early in your time. It took me longer than that, but
yeah. You're
absolutely right. Like, it's such a wild imbalance between attention that is spent on the month of August and actual, like, import to the duration of the season to follow. The reality is, it's not unimportant, but once the initial, and keyword being initial, right, roster is set, it's a reset. Now it's week one. And week to week, so many things can change based on the ebbs and flows of the season, momentum, who's healthy, who's not. So many things change, and that's week one to week two, right? That's not September to December. By December, nobody's going to remember camp. Like it might as well not exist. I mean, it's so far away, and that's December, January. That's the real important time you want to be getting hot into the playoffs. So, like, that is, I think that is a really good lesson to pull away. That took me way too long to realize it, because you have a tendency, like, in camp in August, like, every rep is do or die. It's like, no, you have to take more of a 30,000-foot totality view of the whole thing and where are they at, and then it resets.
Yeah, because especially even like last year, small example, I remember during camp, I was like, oh, this pass rush is good. Like, these guys are solid. Look at all these, what they're doing. And then get into the season, you're like, okay, I guess it's not so good. So that's more than anything. I'm ready for the games to be played. I'm ready to throw the pads on. I'm ready to see what some of these guys do and, yeah, get the show on the road.
I do want to hit on one area we didn't cover, and that is I want to ask, who you think their starting offensive line is going to be against the
Great question. That's another area where it's – it might. We talk about reset, right? I mean, I don't think they know yet. I'm not sure they know yet. Because and Spoon, I mean, you just wrote about this, so feel free to take it away. But it would not surprise me if everyone's healthy at all. If you see a Rashid Walker, Jordan Morgan rotation against the Lions, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I'd almost expect it to a certain extent. I'd almost be surprised if they didn't. Jordan Morgan's got more upside. I wonder if right now, early week one, as good as Jordan Morgan's looked, I wonder if Rashid Walker starting 30-plus games on the blind side in a row, if he might be a little bit more reliable early in the season. That doesn't mean you don't develop Jordan Morgan, because he's got the higher upside, more potential. Rashid Walker, to your note, what you wrote about, he has not played anywhere else but left. He is a left tackle, right? Jordan Moore believes he's a left tackle. Then you've got Aaron Banks. Is he going to be ready? Elton James is going to be the center. If everyone's healthy, does that mean Sean Ryan's right guard or someone else? There's a lot of questions there.
It is true. I think it's also just assuming everyone is going to be healthy. So, yeah, you feel good about Elton Jenkins and Zach Tom.
Yeah, Zach Tom's right now.
That and Elton Jenkins. Like, I have no questions about that. Those are your locks for sure. And then, like I said, maybe Sean Ryan. That left tackle spot is interesting for me, because I think, especially over the last week and a half, Jordan Morgan made this a serious competition.
Yeah.
I think he had a pretty close to perfect, like, in terms of preseason games, in terms of how he performed. And then Spoon even wrote about, in terms of some of the edge rushers that he was lining up against and some young up-and-comers in the Colts. So, like, he put a lot on film that showed that he is worthy of being the left tackle. So, I think, yeah, it's almost like a flip of coin. Maybe with Rashid Walker's health, maybe Jordan Morgan, you might feel good about him. But then again, it's the domino effect with Banks and all the rest of those guys.
Yeah, and I was really taken by surprise when I talked to Morgan after the game. And he's like, I'm a left tackle, and they know that. And, you know, I said, did you make it clear to them that you want to play left tackle? And he said, yes. And so, you know, they're playing him at left guard. Are they going to force him to do that? He doesn't want to. He wants to be a left tackle. And he said he'd be fine with rotating with Walker. I'm interested to see what happens if they do it, have to play him at guard. I just think his mindset is he's a tackle. And a left tackle, and he thinks he can be one of the better ones, and maybe he can, but they got an issue there. How do they, what if Rashid Walker and Jordan Morgan are two of their five best? Like, they're always talking about playing their five best. So does Morgan move to right guard and Ryan's out, or they rotate? And, you know, if Banks is back, I think probably what you said, Ryan, as they rotate. I think that's how they'll start the season. But that's also interesting, rotating against Aiden Hutchinson. You know, I don't know if he'll be on that side all the time. He goes on both sides.
He might make it a point to be on that side more if that's a rotation.
Yeah. So that's another thing. That'll be really interesting to see who their starting five are.
Spoon, I think it's safe to say that Jordan Morgan did not enjoy the whiplash of his rookie season. I think it's very safe. But also, to your point, like, what's your the wonderment of what if they're two of the best five? I think we'll know what's going to happen. the coaches will play Jordan Morgan at guard if he's two of their top five. Like, Jordan Morgan's made it. When I talked to him, I think before Indy, I asked him point blank, like, is that the plan for you from here on out, your left tackle? And he's like, yeah. And the way he said yeah was like it's not even worth the question. Like, of course. Like, duh. Like, and there's no debate here. And that's all well and fine. But at the end of the day, he's not the coach. Like, the coach is going to – if those are two of your best five, you're going to get two of your best five on the field, however it fits best to make the best unit possible.
Yeah.
And if that is Jordan Morgan at guard, he will be a guard.
I think what we're probably looking at is if Banks is hurt, Morgan's going to be the left guard. And Ryan will be the right guard. I think what – if I'm interpreting what Morgan said correctly, is he wants to, regardless of where he's playing, he wants to be in the race to be, he wants to be constantly competing for the left tackle position. He thinks he should be the left tackle.
Long-term.
And so even if he's at guard, you know, he wants to be still considered every week to play left tackle. And so I don't know. I don't think there's a permanent – well, I guess they could play him at right guard ahead of Ryan. They could do that all season long. But I think what his point is, let me compete for left tackle.
I think that there's a money side of this always, but I don't think this is a case where it has much at all at this point in his career, especially – to do with the financials. I think if you watch Jordan Morgan play, he is a much better left tackle than guard. Like, I think he knows that. I think this is a young player who wants to put his best product onto the field. Not selfishly, just to help the team. Like, I am better in this spot. I want to help us win. Put me here. Like, it's very clear. It's basically like what Amari Rodgers never said when they kept putting him at punt returner. He never said, like, I don't do this. This is not me. Like, this is what Jordan Moore tells you. Like, I'll play guard if I'm on top, but I'm a left tackle. That's what I do. So I that's what it strikes me. At the end, maybe the best question is this a good problem to have or not? And I lean toward this is a good problem to have because I think that these guys are all talented. And I think that talent at the top, now the depth's a different story. But at the top, I think that they are in line to have a better offensive line than they had a year ago because they have more talent there. But I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, they just don't have depth. I think their starting five is better. I think Elton Jenkins over Josh Myers is a huge upgrade. And then the ability to add Banks. We don't know how good he's going to be, but he's been a starter for 4 years. So he's at least starter quality. You know, who knows what happens 6 weeks into the season, and maybe Morgan is so good that they could contemplate trading Walker, but that's always dangerous to give up, you know, a tackle. Unless you'd have to be pretty sure that Anthony Belton and Kadeem Telfer were capable of playing. And if you were, then you could think about it. But their issue, I think, is interior. I think they really have some depth issues at interior line.
Yeah, and that really showed throughout preseason. You saw some of the struggles with Monk and with Donovan Jennings and some of these guys inside. So I know it was funny. Obviously, it's social media, so you can't take much from it. But everyone's, like, making a big deal about Darian Kennard. It's like, wait, there's no depth. You need depth on this line because last season, it's almost like an anomaly. You're not going to see many seasons like how the Packers had at O-line, the continuity, and the Eagles and the Ravens, some of those type of teams. It just doesn't happen that often because we talk so much about that playoff game with the Eagles. When one guy went down, it was just a disaster. So that is going to be an interesting shakeup. But the last point I did want to make, Spoon, and I did read it, and I'm pretty sure you asked both Walker and Morgan their feelings, like if there was a rotation. between the tackles, and it seemed like one person was like, "Oh yeah, sure, whatever happens," and maybe the other not so much. Or was
yeah, Walker. Well, Walker's approaching it like I'm the left tackle. You know, I've been the left tackle for almost 2 years, and I've got all these snaps. Why would I want to rotate? You know, so whereas Morgan's like, I just want to play. I want to get in there and play. So I think that's kind of where they were coming from that regard.
Absolutely. Guys, any final words or final thoughts before we wrap up this show and get ready for cutdown day?
My final thought on that is you guys know I started camp pretty skeptical that there'd be a left tackle competition because Rashid Walker's not a bad left tackle. He is a starting quality left tackle. And it became one. Kudos to Jordan Morgan there. Like he turned it into one by his play at left tackle. And again, going back to, is that a good thing or not? Yeah. I mean, if you have two starting caliber left tackles, a lot of teams don't have one, right? Maybe not a lot of teams, but there's certainly teams that don't have one. So yeah, having two is not a bad thing.
That's true. Go ahead, Spoon. You got anything?
Yeah. Well, Owen, my final thought is just about tomorrow. And if you want to follow every cut, then come to the live blog. That's a tradition we've had here where we're working the phones and reporting every time we find out someone's been cut. The Packers don't announce it until the end, but we can find out through various people. So I'll be starting at 7 a.m. Yeah. Bright and early, and the cuts will just come out through the day. And so come join us and I'll answer questions and all of us will be working to ferret out all these cuts.
Spoon, I was going to ask, do you have any cut down day traditions?
Usually the biggest tradition I have lately has been, this is my spot. This isn't my office. But for some reason, I really like this couch for cut down day. And so I always sit here. I'm not in Green Bay. I'm at home. So I don't know why, but this has just been my cut down spot for a long time. So that's my tradition.
I feel that. Yeah. Other than like it's the one day a year where like there's literally smoke coming off my phone from just the rapid. Like it's just like I lose all sense of time on cut down day. Like 4 hours can pass and it felt like it was about 3 minutes.
It's true. So
there's no sense of time on cut down day. It's hard to like, there's very rare that, because usually I'm like the opposite extreme. I always know what time it is. Like I'm a creature of punctuality. Like I have no idea what time it is on cut down day. But the ability to just like sit there in one spot, not move for hours, not have any idea what's happening. And you're just in your own bubble. And the smoke coming off the phone, like that's what cut down day is like.
Yeah. I will say that I probably get up maybe 5 times throughout the 9 hours that I'm on this, right, to go to the bathroom, to get more coffee, and if I have time, maybe get lunch. But when I'm done, I am so stiff, and you know, it's like I got to go do like 12 hours of yoga just so I can walk again.
Can you please get that on video? We need Spoon doing yoga video.
While I'm doing it? Yeah, that'd be
perfect. People demand it. Yes, yes. The yoga routine.
If we could want to cut our viewers down to one, that would be
I think we'll exponentially grow. I think that's what the people want, Spoon.
That's I was going to get brushes. I was gonna joke you could send the workout video to Kamal Hayden, but he might get in trouble. So
yeah,
I don't know if that works. That's awesome, guys! Thank you all so much, and you know, get that caffeine in you. You guys have been sick, so I might need to be hot tea and not coffee.
Yeah.
But thank you guys for toughing it out with me to do this podcast. So it was a pleasure.
Yeah, that's why we're virtual, to keep you nice and healthy. We gotta have one of us.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, if I wake up tomorrow with like a sore throat or something, I'm coming to find you. It's going down. I'm just kidding. Appreciate you guys. Let's get some rest and get ready for tomorrow. And Spoon and Ryan just mentioned, and follow along with the live blog, all the content. We'll have a tracker. There's so much that is going to be, you know, transpiring over the next few hours, tomorrow evening and afternoon. So be sure to follow along with all of that content. And we appreciate you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Gates.